Okay, this is Janet. I'm with Arcus in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'd like to welcome you to Live from IPY, or Live from the International Polar Year, with Robin Elwood, who is located down in the Dry Valleys of Antarctica. Today is November 10th, 2008, and we're pretty excited. We have a lot of people that have joined today, and I think it'll be pretty fun to hear what Robin and the team have got going down in Antarctica. Okay, let's get started. Robin, are you still there?
No, I left.
Okay, well, so Robin, the first slide we have up is lake ecosystems in Antarctica. So we'll turn it over to you right now.
Okay, terrific. First of all, I want to just thank Polar Trek for helping me participate in this experience again this year, and also Dr. Doran and Ian Hawes, who allowed me to join their research team again, and obviously Ride Junior High for letting me leave school again. So I miss everybody back home, and I look forward to seeing everybody. So the McMurdo Long-Term Ecological Research Project, or LTER, McMurdo LTER, there are about, 27 different LTER projects throughout the world. They range from Alaska all the way down to the southernmost one, which is the McMurdo one. And this research team is trying to figure out the ecosystem dynamics of the dry valleys in McMurdo dry valleys. So we are in Antarctica trying to figure out what's going on. Ian and Peter Doran are specifically looking at the lake dynamics and algal mats, in particular the bottom of the lake. So that first picture that you have up on the screen, that's actually taken from McMurdo Station. There's a bunch of people in McMurdo that are obviously helping the researchers get their research done. Everything from pilots and doctors and cooks and computer technicians and you name it. There's somebody. There's even a hairdresser in McMurdo. So there, some of the welders do some sculpting, and that skier was on the hill looking over McMurdo Sound. So it looks like you switched to the view of McMurdo. Oops, now you're back to the other one.
Yeah, it's okay. Just keep going, Robin. We'll keep up with you.
Okay. All right. Yep. That's what we're doing. This year, this season, Ian has tried to set out an experiment that will allow him to confirm whether the model that they've built for what they think is happening is actually correct. Yeah, he says that's right. So the team, the picture that you have up now is the people that are immediately with the team. You got Hilka on the left there. He works for NIWA, is that right? Yeah, and she's sort of the HAL specialist, so I'll let her talk about HAL in a little bit, and the profiling specialist. And then Ian, he's the head PI on the New Zealand side, who works with Peter. And then Aslan, who is one of the divers and setting up the experiments as well. And then there's me. And I think most of you know me, and those of you that don't, hello.
Yeah, it's going to be slower for you, Robin, so just keep going.
That's okay. All right, so Ian, do you want to explain this a little bit? So this is a picture of some of the algae that's at the bottom, and I'll let Ian discuss his main goals. So here's Ian.
Okay, well, good day, everybody. As Robin said, my name's Ian. I'm part of the New Zealand Survey Bank.
Excuse me, Ian.
See on the screen.
Excuse me, Ian. This is Janet.
Hello.
Fairbanks, you're going to have to talk a little bit louder and slower. It's hard to hear you over the phone and the computer.
Okay. So what you can see on the screen there is a piece of what we call an algal mat. And it's made up of a very primitive type of algae, which is really a type of bacterium, but photosynthesizes, like sea plants do. And this is one of the simplest kinds of photosynthetic organism on the planet. And it has been very much the same as that for the last 2 billion years. And those types of algal mats are the very ones that first put oxygen into the Earth's atmosphere a long time ago. And because they're so primitive, then a lot of people think that if there was any record of life on Mars or any other planet, then it would have looked something like that too. basic building block of a lot of the higher types of organisms on this planet here. And then the lakes of the Dry Valley, this is one of the most important forms of carbon-fixing photosynthetic organisms we have, and it contributes a great deal of the carbon that's fixed in the lakes is fixed by these simple plants. What we're looking at is how they respond to changes in the environment. And the thing for these lakes, and you have to remember that they're permanently covered with thick layers of ice. In some lakes, they may be 5 meters thick, which is a lot of ice. What that does is it makes the light they reach is very, very low. So these organisms are not only very ancient, possibly space travelers, but also the plants that are growing at some of the lowest light levels on the planet. So they're very sensitive to small changes in the environment, such as when the ice gets thinner and more transparent. And that's what we're looking at right now, how they respond to those changes and how those changes will be rippled through the whole ecosystem to the amount of productivity. Thank you. Okay, and that's what we're doing. Thank you, Robin.
Thanks.
All right. So in order to give people a sense of where we are, I thought it would be kind of nice to show you some satellite pictures. So obviously the first picture on the top left there is not an actual satellite picture, but it gives you a sense. So everybody knows where Antarctica is, hopefully. And you can see in that picture that it's basically a large continental ice sheet, so it's covered with ice for the most part. But as you get out towards the edges, just some of that ice has receded a little bit. And if you look in the top left picture of Antarctica, the bottom part of it, where there's that little dip that goes up and in, that's where we are. So the picture on the right there is a zoomed-in actual satellite image of that region. And so what you can see in the second picture there on the right-hand side is a lot of white, which is obviously ice. And then at the very bottom center of that picture, there's some black area with some white splotches in it. That black is actual sea water, and those splotches are icebergs. So to the left of that, yeah, right there, those are the icebergs. So Ross Island is the island to the left of that. So you can see there's a big island chunk sticking up. That's Ross Island. And that's where Mount Erebus is and Mount Terror and some of the other volcanoes. And Mount McMurdo and Scott Base are both at the very tip of the spike that comes out of the top of that island. So they're way at the tip. So McMurdo is actually on an island. And if you go to the tip of the spike where McMurdo is, and you look straight over to the right, you see some browner areas in the picture, and those are the dry valleys. Those are the areas where the ice has receded out. So we're going to zoom in a little closer on the dry valley area. Right, we're going to zoom in right there. There it is. So if you look at the top left one there, we're into the dry valley area. So what's really neat is if you look at the center of that picture, there's actually two valleys there. And the top one has ice still in it. So the glacier from the plateau is still flowing down into that valley. And the very next one over is barren. So there's no glacier in the valley itself. So it's called a dry valley. And it's relatively ice-free. You can see that there's some valley glaciers seeping in over the mountains, like the Canada Glacier, which is what we're right beside, is seeping in from above. And then there's also ice that cover the lakes. So if you look in the very center of that valley, you've got some lakes in the middle there. So the picture to the right, we zoomed in on the Canada Glacier, and you can see the glacier itself kind of oozing out into the valley from the mountains above. Yep, that's the Canada Glacier. And then Lake Frixel is to the left, to the bottom left of that, and Lake Hoare is to the upper right of it. So we're on the sort of pointy, skinny lake. Right, and we're nestled right in there. That's where our camp is. So it gives you a sense of where we are. So then you can go to the next slide, and I think it should be showing you what you would see if you fly into the valleys. And you get this classic U-shaped valley, which is evidence of a glacier having once gone through there. So you've got that nice U-shape, and then you can see some of the valley glaciers seeping in from the side. And if you go to the next slide, I believe it's looking up the Taylor Valley, and yeah. And actually, that's my tent right there in the picture. And you can see it's very dry and barren looking. And there's a lot of suspicions that there hasn't been any water in this area, rain in this area since the Pleistocene, which is like 10,000 years ago at the earliest, up to millions of years ago. So it's a very dry ecosystem. So the water that does come in from the glacier melt is very important to the things that are living here. That's all I needed on that slide. All right, so one of the first things we have to do is drill a hole. So in order to access the algal mat from the bottom, we want to drill a hole and start diving. And it sounds like it'd be quite simple to drill a hole, and sometimes you can hit a spot that's not too terribly difficult, but other times, and normally, it's not the easiest task in the world. And that's actually Matrix right there, getting ready to drill. And each flight, which is the auger, is about a meter long, and it took us a little over about four meters to get through the ice this year. So it's about 12 feet thick this year, which is a little thinner than in the past, actually. So if you imagine 12 feet of drill bit on the bottom of that, and you're trying to drill it all out, it's not the easiest thing to do. So once you drill it, then you have a hole, and then obviously you can't fit a diver down the hole that's the size of that auger, so we have to melt the hole into a bigger spot. So we set up a hot sea and a generator, and we start melting. And we actually melt the hole. It takes a couple days, usually, if you have one hot sea. Actually, in that picture there of the dive hole, you can see the black cable coming off to the left. That's actually some of the hot sea cable. So we're still melting at that point during the picture. So what starts out as a very small hole turns into a big enough hole for people to get down. And then we go for a swim. And I'm not sure what the next slide is. Oh, okay. So while we're waiting for the hole to melt, since it takes a couple days for it to melt, we start doing some of the other tasks, like Hilka put Hal together, and actually Aswin and Ian all did that. The top two pictures there are of them putting Hal, which is a profiler, which I'll have them explain in a minute. And then Ian is there working on the light array. So this season we put out three shade screens and three light arrays, and they're going to test their modeling hypothesis with this experiment. So they think they've got it pretty well figured out how the light affects the algal mats, and this experiment will test to see if that's correct. So it's pretty exciting. They're sort of at the tail end of their research for this project. So there's lots of stuff to do while the hole's melting. You don't just sit around and twiddle your thumbs. So once the diving starts, you need to get all suited up. Obviously, the water's quite cold, so you need to be in dry suits. Get a little bulkier. The first thing you have to put on is your fins and your weight belt and your pony bottle, which is a little backup air supply in case there's a problem with the umbilical. So we use surface supply air. So in the background of that picture, behind Ian, that's Ian in the dry suit, you can see the scuba tanks to the left. Those actually stay on the surface. They don't go down with us. And the yellow box, it looks like it's sitting on Ian's head. That's the communications box, so that's how we can talk to the diver and get the diver air supply. You can actually see the hoses coming from the dive tank into the box. They come out the other side and go into that colorful hose, and that colorful hose attaches to the helmet. So the next picture, show the next phase getting ready, and I think it's actually of me getting ready. That's thanks to Jillian, because they wanted a picture in Flagstaff. So then they put this big helmet on you, and you're hooked up, ready to go, and then you jump in, and you start collecting whatever samples they need or whatever, deploy whatever equipment they need out. And actually, in the picture on the right there, you can see the pony bottle on my back. So it's just a small small tank that you take just in case there's a problem with the umbilical. And there's a, the next one is a self-portrait of me underwater. Can't get your arms far enough away to get a good picture. But you can kind of go through that one quickly. You know, there's nothing really to talk about on that one. Okay, so this is some of what the algae looks like down below, and it's very different depending on where you are. Up in shallower water, where the oxygen bubbles have sort of gotten trapped underneath the mat, they'll start to bubble up and actually start to tear the mat, and it starts to lift off. So it's these lift-off zones where the algae, it actually looks quite spooky. And it's kind of wobbling around as you get near it. And then other parts is very pinnacly, and then other parts is very porous-looking, so it's very, all right. So you just get a sense. So here's Hal. This is Hal getting deployed. We first put him in the water and then attach a lift bag to him and move him from the dive hole to a place where he wants, where they want to be collecting data. And then they set him down. And you can see on the right-hand side of Hal, there's some probes. And this time they were looking at oxygen. So this is Hal down to the bottom.
Great. Are you still there, Robin?
Okay, so there's Hal in position. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we heard you. You were just mumbling, I think, away from the phone.
Oh, sorry. So then Hal gets set down in position, and this is from this season. You can see just in some clear mat area there, and he's got the oxygen probe on, and that oxygen probe basically goes up and down into the mat and measures how much oxygen is there throughout the mat. The next picture, yeah, is showing some of the graph for that, and I think Silke is willing to explain some of that to you. Okay, so this is actually some of the data that we got this season. So here's Hilka. Welcome to Hilka.
Hi, yeah, I'm Hilka. I'm originally from New Zealand, but I'm originally from Germany, Robin has explained most of what Hal is.
Excuse me. You need to speak louder and closer to the phone. We can't hear you.
Okay. I'll try. Is that better?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, right. What you see on that image there is one of the data series that Hal is measuring. Hal is sitting underwater. As Robin explained, he's got these tiny little probes. They're only 50 micrometer in diameter. And we have a motor, and Hal has a motor, and the motor is going up and down. And so when the motor is going down, Hal is measuring oxygen in the water, which are these top data points you can see. They're around about 1,800. And then where the oxygen starts to increase, that's where the probe is getting close to the mat. Very nice little error there. Because as Robin and Ian, those beds are photosynthesizing, so they produce oxygen. And that's why when the probe goes into the mat, the oxygen starts to increase. And so Hal is going to take those, sample those profiles about once an hour. So while he's sitting there in the water measuring those profiles, we can then examine how these dynamics and how these profiles change with different lights, because we also measure light. So now we can see that this profile was probably taken while there was a lot of sunlight, and you can see that there's quite a big sort of bump in the profile. When the sun goes behind the mountain, we don't really have a sunset, a proper one, but we do have different light because the sun sometimes is behind the mountain and it's in a shady area. And the profile looks very different. And so from those shapes of the profiles, we can then apply some models and we can calculate some rates that are really important for us to understand how the algae mats work. And, yeah, we have learned a lot about Hal. Hal is not just an instrument. I don't know if Robin ever explained to you why he got the name, but you could put that out as a bit of quiz. Hal has his own behavior. We did figure out that he doesn't like working between 2 and 5 in the morning, and we kind of understand. We don't like that either. We just didn't let him work that time, and then he started to behave much better. So, yeah, but now he's all back in his box and waiting to come back to New Zealand with us. So, yeah, all done.
10 years. I think that's really all. That's probably all you want to know about the data. So I'll pass it back up to Robin.
Yeah. Hi, Robin. There was a question earlier from New Start Middle School. They wanted to know how you got out of the ice. Like when you
got out of the
your hole after diving. How do you get out?
Yeah, so basically you just, rise back up to the surface because you got some air in your suit, so you don't even, you hardly even have to swim because the air is expanding. So, and you can see there's only maybe 10 inches to a foot between where the water is and where the edge of the ice is. So basically you have the umbilical cord coming off the diver, and we have two people up on the shore, and one person pulls the umbilical cord, and the other person grabs either a weight belt strap or whatever they can get a hold of, and we literally just pull the person up out of the water. We try to launch each other out. We're best at launching Ian out. So basically, just pull people out.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Okay, why is Hal called Hal? Nobody.
Wow. This I just realized this year too. I think Sandra actually is the one who gave him the name. Aren't you the name? I think so. 2 years ago, when we first brought Hal down, he was acting very persnickety and kind of took on a mind of his own. And apparently, in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, there's a computer named Hal that takes on his own personality and goes after the astronauts. So Sandra named this profiler Hal. The name has stuck. So he's Hal.
Okay. So you can go on from where you left off. Let's see. I think it's on bottom net.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is a picture of the shade screens that we deployed. This is two of the three, and they look a little bit like little robots down there. Basically, they're just mesh nets. So what they're doing is shading a little bit of the algae that's underneath those, obviously, so they'll get a little bit less light. And there are sensors down there that will measure how much light is actually getting through. And then Ian and the team can figure out if their modeling hypothesis is correct. So there's three shade screens to reduce the amount of light, the natural light that's reaching the mat below. And then we also added three light screens, which when I had to send the PowerPoint slides, we hadn't put them in the water yet, so I didn't have pictures for the PowerPoint, but they are on the journal pages if anybody's interested. So we have three similar size, actually they're the same size pieces of equipment, but instead of a shade screen, they've got rows of lights that shine down to actually increase the amount of light that the mat below gets it. So you can see it's they're weighted down with, they're actually little bags of rocks or, yeah, there's rocks. And then there's slopes to keep the screen up off the bottom. So it's a pretty delicate deployment to get them down onto the bottom without us touching the bottom of the mat, because we don't want to touch, obviously. So there's two of the three shade screens. And then this is just some of the different tasks. In the picture in the middle there, you can see Hilka and Aslan and Ian, and Ian's about to go diving, and Hilka is confirming some depths that she wants Hal's probe to be at. And the one on the left is me at the compressor refilling the dive tanks. And the one on the bottom right there is Hilka. Next to the dive hole, we set up a tent. And in the tent, there's a little heater that keeps Hal's batteries warm, and Hilka works on the computer from in there to tell Hal what to do. So she can actually control where the probe is, and then we can communicate back and forth to each other, the diver and Hilka, to see what needs to get done. I just wanted to show a couple of the other things that we've been fortunate to see. Before we're allowed to dive down here, we have to go on a checkout dive. So Rob took Aslan and I out to Little Razorback Island, which is where there's a bunch of seals. So this is one of the Weddell seals that was laying on the ice. Looks like he's dead, but he's completely happy and breathing away. So you could hear breathing and snoring when we got up close. And then the top right picture, obviously, is a penguin. That's an Adelie penguin that actually had wandered through our camp here at Lake Four, which is not a good place for penguins to be because there's nothing for them to eat out here, and they're a long way from home. So those of you that have been following the journal, this penguin was not rescued, but he's disappeared. So we all are thinking that he wandered himself back out to the colony and is living happily ever after, although we're not particularly confident of that. But nobody can find him right now, so... So just some nice things. I'm actually going to a penguin colony hopefully tomorrow, so I'll have some happy penguin pictures.
Hopefully. Okay, and while you were talking about penguins and seals, New Start Middle School has a question. What are some of the animal species that are found in the lake?
In the lake, it's all microscopic organisms. So we have bacteria, we have protists, ciliates, all microscopic stuff to make up the algal mat. So there's really nothing in the lake in terms of bigger things to see. So basically the algae that you saw in the pictures, that's pretty much what you see in the lake. The dry valley there is a very desolate area. So occasionally you'll get some skuas flying through, which are they're basically similar to seagulls. They're Antarctic, basically. They're technically not, but they're similar in look. And occasionally you'll get a penguin walking through, and occasionally you'll even get a seal waddling way up here, which is really unbelievable to imagine that they've wobbled themselves all the way up into the valley.
Okay, Robin, there's just a couple more pictures of diving in the valleys.
This one is... show some of the challenges of diving in Antarctica, and that it's obviously cold here. So the picture on the left is Ian. He had just gotten out of the water, and instantly his dry suit started to crystallize with ice. So you get out, and you start to crinkle up because you get icy right away. Unless the sun is out and there's no wind. If the sun is out with no wind, it's actually quite pleasant. It's not that bad. But that's typically you start to ice up. And the equipment freezes, too. So on the picture on the right, the weight belt, or actually that's the pony bottle strap, had actually frozen. We couldn't even bend it to get it attached, so we had to pour hot water on it just to get the webbing to bend. And regulators freeze, and so we have to keep hot water with us so we can thaw out the equipment so that it works properly. So just some of the challenges that people might not think about. And I think the last couple slides are just scenery pictures. It's just a picture of that's 1882. That's one of the mountains down the valley. And actually, it's the white in the foreground is actually Lake Four. So that's the lake ice. And then you can see the valley itself is the brown, barren stuff. And then the white in the background is seeping in from the side. That's actually a glacier coming in. That's the Seuss Glacier. And then I think the last picture there, that's just that's Lake Hoare in the foreground and Canada Glacier in the background. That's the tip of Canada Glacier. So just to give you a sense of where we are.
Okay, Robin, we have a lot of questions from all, then there's lots of schools on today. So we're going to start with your school, Rye Junior High, and Sheila's getting everybody started and set up there. And then we'll go to other schools that have joined us today as well. So if Rye is ready, we're ready for your questions.
Okay, we're here with some students.
I'm Langdon. I'm from Rye. Regarding your research, what was the most astonishing thing out of all your trips?
Of all my trips, the most astonishing thing. Hi, Langdon. How are you? I really enjoy putting out or helping these guys with the experiments that they're doing. It's kind of fun to be part of helping them try to figure things out. And I also enjoy the seals, my encounters with the Weddell seals. But I think it's pretty amazing that you can put a little probe down into an algae mat and figure out how much oxygen is being produced as you go deeper into the mat. I think that's really interesting.
Okay. Next question from Rye.
Okay, go ahead.
Ms. Elwood, when you're fin tipping, is it difficult to not disrupt the ground below you, or is it easy to keep yourself level?
And that was Devin.
I didn't hear the first part of the question. Could you sit?
When you're fin tipping, is it difficult to not disrupt the ground below you, or is it easy to keep yourself level?
Okay, I got that one. Actually, it's not too hard. Just gotta be comfortable in the dry suit. So it's all about buoyancy control. So once you have a anchor spot, it's actually quite simple to just put a little air in your suit, let a little air out, and you basically just rise and fall with the level of the air that's in your suit. Or by your breathing. So if you start to lower yourself and you're getting a little too close, you can just inhale a breath, and that is the air that you put into your lungs will help keep you up. So it's actually kind of funny. We can, the people up above can tell when the people are getting close to the bottom, to the mat, because they'll start going, breathing in to get some air into their lungs.
Okay, and while Rye's getting ready for the next one, Allison is asking, do the dry valleys ever get snowed in?
No, not in a long, long time. Not in a long, long time.
Okay, Rye, do you have another question?
Hi, I'm Corey, and I'm just wondering, have you seen any noticeable changes in the algal mat since you were first started diving in Antarctica?
First of all, hi, Corey. Have I seen visibly seen any changes? I'll ask Ian for that one, because he's in tune with that. So hang on one second.
Yeah, hi, Corey. That's a good question, because we often talk about change and people wonder whether there is any. What we can say is that whenever there's a change in the conditions in the lake, then we see a change in the mat. And a really good example is from a lake called Lake Vandam, which has increased in level by about 10 meters over the last 20 years. And that's because of the increased melting. And in that lake, we can see new areas of lake bottom which have been covered by algal mat, and other areas which have just got deeper. And we can see big changes in the areas that have got deeper, and we can see new mats developing on the areas that have been recently flooded. So answer to your question is yes, whenever we see an environmental change, we see a response from the animals and plants that live in that environment.
Okay, thank you. And we'll take one more question from Rye, and then we'll move on to Broadfordy.
Hi, my name is Pat, and I have a question for all the divers. How do you feel before each dive?
I always find it pretty exciting to be going back in. I always look forward to it. So putting the helmet on, it can sometimes be a little bit of a weird kind of sensation. All of a sudden you've got this, you're blocked off from the world. In fact, the other day, when I got out of the water, it's usually when you want the helmet off, and the zipper on the back broke. So I didn't like that one because it took longer to get out of the helmet. But no big deal. You still have plenty of air. It's always exciting, though, to be getting back in the water.
Okay.
Ian says leave it at that.
Okay. Broadfordy, we're ready for your question.
Hi. Out of all the places you've been, where was it the coldest, and how cold was it?
Coldest. Well, it's been minus 15 here at Lake Four in the past. And the coldest place personally that I've ever been was actually in a place in New Hampshire where it was 50 below, but it gets here, it can be that here too. So, we're actually fairly fortunate that the weather's been pretty cooperative. I think the coldest Fahrenheit this year has been about minus 20 with the wind chill. Something about that. So, and that was here at Lake Forest.
Okay, and we have a question from New London Elementary School. Go ahead, New London. Okay, they want to know, they're typing it in, so sorry. They want to know what the average temperature has been during your stay there, Robin.
At Lake Hoar, I guess the average temperature's probably been about 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit, roughly. There's been a few days when it's been warmer than that and a few days when it's been colder, but I think that's a pretty good guess. I haven't mapped it out, but I think there's some classes that have actually done that, so they might be able to email me the answer, and I can post it for you.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go back to Rye Junior High. Do you have more questions?
Hi, I'm Parker, and I would like to know. I read that you would be working on the Rye Junior High robot and also the Endurance, not how. Do you know the exact date that you would be testing the robots, and what kind of things will the robots be doing?
Good question. The Rye Junior High robot is going to be launched sometime this week. We're actually heading back to McMurdo this evening. We have a 9 o'clock helicopter flight tonight back to McMurdo, or actually I think it's that base, and then I'll get back to McMurdo. And then I'm going to be in McMurdo for a few days, and during that time I will be taking the Rye Junior High robot out to McMurdo Sound, and we will be launching it then. I don't know the exact date yet, but it's probably going to be within the next four days. And I will be posting that on the website, so keep an eye out for that. We're trying to just get clarification on which site I'm going to launch it at. That robot's name is Scuba-Dooba-Doo, and it's getting revved up, ready to go. So we'll throw that in the water. And then the Endurance robot is just getting set to go out to Lake Bonney. So when I get back to McMurdo, I'm going to help with some of their preparation. And then we'll be going up to Lake Bonney to launch the Endurance. And the Endurance is going to map west lobe of Lake Bonney. So it's going to do a depth profile for the lake. And it's also going to be measuring, I think, light and oxygen. It's got a bunch of sensors on it, and I don't know all the details of it yet, but I will know in the next few days. So that's the next phase of the project.
Okay. And we have some other questions that came online while you were there, also from Rye. Are you cold diving even with a dry suit? That's one question. And what dangers do you face while diving?
When you're in the lake, you're not cold when you first get in because there's nothing really touching the water. And actually, my dry suit has been working great, so thank you, Rye Junior High. So you're actually fairly warm when you first get in the lake, and then after about half an hour or so, you start to cool off. In the ocean, it's a little different because you're not on surface supply, so you don't have the helmet on, so you just have a regular scuba diving mask. So your face is exposed to the water, and the water in the ocean is even colder. So your face gets really cold. It actually stings quite a bit, but it only stings for about 10 or 15 seconds, and then you're so numb that you don't feel it anymore. So it's not so bad then either. But you cool off a little quicker in the ocean because the temperature is colder. And in terms of dangers, I don't know if I would say there's any dangers really other than I just have to be careful with your depth and the length of time that you stay down. In the ocean, it's a little easier to get into deeper water without realizing it because the visibility is so clear. And there's no real danger to animals around, so it's enjoyment.
Okay, and a question from New Start. How deep is the lake in its deepest part?
The deepest part of Lake Bore is about 90 to 100 feet. So it's not all that deep a lake.
Okay. And Bradfording, you guys had another question?
Yes, this is the teacher at Bradfording. I was wondering, what do you hope to research when you go into the lake? What is it you're looking to discover?
They are trying to figure out the oxygen production rate and growth rate of the algal mats in the lake. And from that information, they can gather not only how energy and nutrients are flowing through the lake, but also whether there's signals of climate change and how these things are, how these organisms that are making up the mat, how they are responding to those changes in climate. So they're looking for signs of growth. They're looking for how the mat reacts to changes in the environment, and they're looking for signals of climate change.
Okay, and we have a question from oh, I forgot where school it is, but Bob, you have a question?
Hi,
Bob.
Yes, here we are.
How many different types of algae do you think you've seen or found?
How many different types of what?
Algae. Seen or found.
Ian is saying there's about 30 common species of algae and probably another 50 rare ones. So there's a bunch of different species in the lake. And some of the when you get into some of the pictures I was showing earlier, you can see some of the different structures that they take on. It's actually quite amazing. The patterning becomes quite different.
Robin, this is Janet. Related to that, are those algae just found in that lake only? Are they found in other lakes found in Antarctica? Or when you say common, is it just to that area, or is it common in other places?
They're found in other places as well. It's just that it's such a limited ecosystem here. There's nothing else really to interfere with it. So it's quite nice to be able to get a direct measurement of just how these algae are responding. Whereas in the other places, you might see that algae, but there's so many other things interacting with it. It becomes very complicated to narrow down the trace thing.
Okay. It looks like we have some more questions from Rye Junior High. Go ahead.
This is Tucker, and I was wondering if Mount Everest is erupting and or spewing lava.
Mount Erebus is not spewing lava, but it is steaming and chugging smoke away just about every day. And it basically has these little hiccups every day, where it hiccups out some what they've nicknamed lava bombs. These are just little droplets of lava that get burped out of the volcano. So if I guess if you're up on the volcano at the crater, you might actually see that, but you can't see that at all from down below. So it's not erupting on what you would typically think of. But it's an impressive mountain. It's impressive to see it smoking away over there.
Okay, Rye, go ahead if you have another question.
Hi, it's Jackie. And I have a question, and even though I know that Weddell's deer are harmless to humans, do you ever get scared of them when you die?
Do I ever get scared of what?
Weddell seals.
No, no. I think they're really fun. The only time I've ever been nervous around them was 2 years ago, and I think you might know the story, but others don't. Where we were about to get out of a dive, and a Weddell seal beat us back to our dive hole and plugged the hole, so we couldn't get out. And we were low on air and thinking, how are we going to get out? That's our only dive hole. But it moved out on its own, and apparently all you have to do is touch the bottom of its flippers and it'll move out. But that's the only time I've been nervous around them. It's impressive to see them, and they're just huge. So when they're swimming around you, it's quite exciting.
Okay. Another question from Rye.
This is Kylie, and has your computer literally ever frozen in these weather conditions? If not, how do you keep it from doing so?
I've never left it outside to freeze. I suppose it could, but we keep it in a hut heated, and when we're traveling in helicopters, we keep it in what's called the do not freeze section or the internal load. So, we keep them pretty warm. So the electronic stuff we take pretty good care of.
Okay. And Allison Elwood, do you want to ask your question? Okay. Maybe she doesn't. So I'll ask it for her. She wrote, are there any sounds you hear while diving under the lake?
Obviously you hear your bubbles. One of the coolest sounds to hear under the lake in the lake diving is the ice cracking. You can hear it cracking and popping occasionally. And that can be quite exciting. And then in the ocean diving, you can hear, the last time I was there, we were near where the Weddell seals were, and we could actually hear the seals talking or singing or chatting with each other, and that was really, really neat. So Yeah, and then also when we're diving in the lakes, we're on surface supplies, so we have communication, so we can talk back and forth to each other.
Okay, we have a couple more questions online, and then I'll go to Bob. Let's see, Bradfordine has asked, has a seal ever killed a human on your team?
Has a seal ever killed somebody?
That's the question.
Not on our team.
Okay, and then New Start had one more question. When you deploy the screens for shading the algae, when will you remove those screens? In 2 years?
Yes, those will come out in 2 years. And the last thing we did, or Ian did, was hook up the solar panels, which will keep them running during there's time when there's light, obviously. It won't run during the wintertime. So the experiment will hold out in 2 years.
Okay. And then, Shapley, you have another question? Bob?
My name is Summer, and I'm from Chapel Memorial School. What are the diving suits that you wear made of?
Mine is sort of a vinyl material. So underneath it, you wear a sort of like a, almost like a fleece polypro heavy-duty suit. And then there's a vinyl suit that goes over the top of that that seals off at your wrist and your neck so none of the water gets through. So I think most of ours are vinyl, and they do make neoprene dry suits as well. So you have some different types.
Okay. And is there another question from Shapley?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Is Mount Erebus the only volcano in Antarctica?
No, there's actually quite a few volcanoes in Antarctica, different areas. It's one of the biggest ones around here, and it's the southernmost active volcano. So there's actually quite a few volcanoes, and there's actually quite a few underwater volcanoes, too, that don't actually soak up through, but Mount Erebus is the most notorious in this area.
Okay, any more from you guys?
Yes, we have one more.
Okay, great.
What are some of the dangers you face in Antarctica?
Probably the biggest thing would be cold temperatures, just trying to maintain proper warmth. And it's actually quite a challenge because you get days when it's quite chilly in the morning, and you get dressed up for that, and then you get out, and as the sun brightens up a little bit, it comes out from behind the mountains, it starts to warm up, and then you get overheated. So it's constant temperature control of adding layers, taking layers off, adding layers, taking layers off.
Okay. And Bradfordine. Go ahead, Bradfordine.
I was wondering, how thick is the ice down there?
Say how thick?
Yes. I think, how thick on the lake? Is that what you're asking? On the lake? Is that what you're
asking? Yes.
Yeah, okay. This year it seems to be about 12 or 13 feet thick. In the past it's been closer to 15 feet thick. And then the sea ice is thinner than that. It's about six or eight feet out on the where we're diving, and then it gets to be thicker where it doesn't break out as much. So it can be as thick as 20 feet if it doesn't break out. But the lake ice is typically between 10 and 15 feet.
Okay, and then Bradfordine had an earlier question they typed in. What is the plan if oxygen levels are out of whack in the lake?
What's the plan? Try to figure out why that's happening and see what it means. Or tap it in and put it in our scuba tank.
Okay. And
it would be interesting it'd be interesting if it was totally out of sorts, because some of their modeling then would be thrown off. So.
And then I think Rye has some more questions. Rye, do you have more questions?
Hi, this is Allie, and I have a question for Ms. Elwood. How long does it take to get from McMurdo Station to Dry Valleys, and how far is it?
It's about 50 miles, and by helicopter it takes about an hour, 45 minutes. It's a pretty cool ride, though, in the helicopter. You get to come over the sound, and you see frozen icebergs, and then you get into the Dry Valleys where there's just massive valleys with glaciers coming in from the sides. We're going to have some helicopters coming in here pretty soon, so we need to maybe just take a couple more questions.
Rye, do you have another?
Are you there?
Yeah, sorry, I had my phone on mute. Rye, do you have another question?
We are actually just about left with just the walkers now because some of the bus riders are getting ready to go. So we have plenty of disappointed students not being able to talk. But
okay. You got cut off there, but we understand that you guys have to go. Everybody ends up having to go. So you guys can all say goodbye to Robin, and I just want to remind you all that this is archived and will be available on the website, and we have some other events coming up from Mount Erebus in the future, as well as other places in Antarctica, so we hope you guys will all join us again, and thanks, Robin and the team. It was great to hear your voices.
Thanks,
Robin.
Nice to chat with everybody.
Thanks, Robin.
Bye. 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 Bye.